Imagine a scene from a film, a spaghetti western, a very poor, small town somewhere in Mexico around 100 years ago. For years, the town has been under the thumb of the bandits who live in the hills, until one day, Clint Eastwood rides into town. He looks around at the local peasants cowering in the shadows. "Looks to me like you could do with some help," which is probably the longest line Clint Eastwood has ever said in the film.
"Señor," one replies, "we need someone who can get rid us of these bandits."
"Guess that's what I'll have to do." Out of the church comes the priest.
"I'll come and help you, señor."
Clint looks at him and then says, "It's okay, father. This is a job for men. You can stay here and pray." He takes a puff on his cheroot, a bit pointless because it's never lit. He spits and rides off. And the camera pans round and follows the little priest back into the church and stays on the priest as he prays. Of course it doesn't. The camera will always follow Clint as he rides off to do the stuff. That's where the action's going to be. It's Clint who's the hero. The little priest, oh, he's nothing really. And I guess if we're honest, that's how most people see prayer. Real men don't bother with prayer. They just get out there and get stuck in with the action. Of course, we would never think like that. Well, not consciously anyway. But I wonder if deep down that thought isn't there. Give us a job to do and we'll get stuck in. Call us to pray, then it just doesn't somehow seem so important. Over the last few Sundays and in our home groups, we've been thinking about life on the front line, living out our faith in the places where we spend the majority of our time, at work, with our friends, with our families. It's been quite challenging, and it can leave us feeling just a bit under pressure. But it doesn't have to be like that, because unlike our mythical spaghetti western, living on the front line should involve both action and prayer. In fact, if it doesn't involve prayer, nothing will ever be achieved by the action. And in our reading from Matthew's Gospel, we heard from Jesus what our prayer should look like. So let's turn again to that now, that very well-known passage, Matthew 6 on page 970. Of course, we all know the Lord's Prayer. We'll use it later in the service. But I guess that mostly we tend to think of it as something that kind of stands alone, rather than it being a part of Jesus' teaching about the kingdom. But before we get to the prayer itself, let's look how Jesus introduced it. The Jews, who made a big display of their praying, had really missed the point. In fact, though they thought they were talking to God, actually, they were talking to the people around them. They loved to pray, standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Now, admittedly, there's not much likelihood of even the most enthusiastic of us going out into the middle of Morton, kneeling down and praying. And if we did, it wouldn't impress people. They'd just think we were balmy. But the idea is there. Our circumstances may be different, but the underlying issue is, when you are praying, what's the most important thing? You see, it is quite possible to pray without really thinking about who you are praying to. You can pray in order to impress others, although I don't think we do that very much. But so often when we pray, the only thing we're really interested in is the issues we are praying about. We lose sight of the person we are praying to. Jesus said, when you pray, go into your room, close the door and pray to your Father who is unseen. Jesus wasn't banning prayer meetings. He wasn't forbidding us to have prayer triplets, just the opposite. His point was making sure you know who you are talking to He didn't just say, go to your room and pray, but go into your room and pray to your Father. And when you know that you're praying to a Father who cares for you more than you even care for yourself, you'll know that you don't have to try to batter him into submission. You don't need to babble at him. It's to do with a relationship with him. It's why in church here we'd never kind of have candles that we light as part of prayer. I know in some churches they will light a candle as a prayer thing. But in actual fact, the reasoning behind that is that you can light the candle and then clear off and get on with your life, and the candle does the praying for you. That's not prayer. You don't have to have something else go on presenting your prayer for you. If Gwen wanted to ask me about something, I wouldn't be that impressed if she sent someone else to pester me about it. That wouldn't say much for our relationship. And prayer is essentially about our relationship with God. In fact, prayer is only possible within that relationship. If you've never acknowledged Jesus as your Lord, then God isn't your Father. And you don't have this sort of access to him. But you see, to call God Father doesn't just mean that he's a kind of benevolent, doting parent who'll give whatever you ask, even if that is how we tend to treat him sometimes. If you really call God Father, you are actually committing yourself to the work of his kingdom. Nowadays, most children grow up and do something entirely different to their parents. But of course, in Jesus' time, it was different. In Jesus' time, a son would be apprenticed to his father. Joseph was a carpenter, so Jesus learned to be a carpenter from his dad. So now, if the disciples are to call God Father, that will involve being apprentices in God's work, seeing what he's doing, then learning to do it themselves. Of course, that doesn't mean becoming like God themselves. It's to do with God's kingdom agenda. And still today, if you are going to use the Lord's Prayer, if you are going to call God Father, then he has a part for you to play in his work. That's what living faithfully on the front line is all about. But of course, you can't do it on your own. Neither could the disciples. So the prayer Jesus gave them was a prayer that the Father would help and empower them as disciples. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. You see, if you have acknowledged God as your Father, then you are bound to care about his honor. You will want him to be worshipped by all of creation. You will want his world to be freed from all that rejects his rule. And so you will be committed to live in a way which honors the Lord, so that your life shows the world what God is like. And that's a pretty tall order. So you will have to pray, hallowed be your name. In other words, Father, I want to live in a way that honors you, but I know I can't do it on my own. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. God's kingdom, his perfect reign where there is no more mourning or hunger or pain or loneliness or anxiety. God's will being done, which will always be for good. And if we call him Father, our work as apprentices is to share in that. But again, we can't possibly do it on our own. So we pray, your kingdom come. Not in the sense of leaving God to get on with bringing in his rule, but as our prayer that he will equip us to play our part in that. Your kingdom come through Food Bank and the Family Pack Project and TLC. Your kingdom come through our evangelism, through Sunday clubs and SOS. Your kingdom come through us living faithfully on our front lines so that others can see what the life of the kingdom looks like. Your will be done. Because however much we might think we know what should happen, we are humble. We recognize that the Father's way is always the best way, even if we don't always understand it. And then give us today our daily bread. And it might sound
as if things have suddenly gone away from the kingdom to the here and now and to my wants. At last we can get to the relevant bit and pray about what I want. But I'm not sure that that's the case. Because literally what Jesus seems to say here is, give us today our bread for tomorrow. Or, give us today the bread of tomorrow. Our Old Testament reading from Isaiah 55 gives us another great picture of the kingdom, of the time when God's reign will be seen on earth. Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen, listen to me and eat what is good. Give us today our daily bread or the bread of tomorrow. What Jesus seems to be saying is, give us now the bread which you promised in Isaiah 55. Give us now the blessings of the coming kingdom. And forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. One of the great promises, kingdom promises, was of the time when God's people would know his forgiveness. Something that was made possible through Jesus' death and which we commemorate in this service. But if forgiveness is one of the great blessings of the kingdom, then if we are part of the kingdom, we have to forgive people ourselves. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Because if you turn around and align yourself with Jesus, then you will face opposition. And when that happens, there is a real temptation to give up. I guess that most Christians at some time or another have faced that question. Why do I bother? That's what the evil one wants, for you to give up following Jesus. And on your own, that temptation, that testing might be too much. Once again, we can't manage it on our own, and so we pray, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. God's reign has come in Jesus. And as disciples, we're invited, we're called to be part of it. When you accept that invitation, you discover that the God of the universe is your Father, that he gives you peace, joy, love, and so much more. And just as wonderful as that, despite his greatness, he has a part for you to play. Something that will give your life eternal significance. And in this prayer, he invites you to ask him for the help you need. Later in the service, we will use the Lord's Prayer together. And when we do, it is a chance for each of us to say, yes, I acknowledge God as my Father. And as I do that, as his child, I want to follow him. I want to be part of his kingdom. I want to make a difference on my front line. I know I can't do it on my own, so please help me. God has given us work to do, and he's also given us a prayer, so that we can seek his help, so that he can be at work through us. Life on the front line can be hard, but it's never something that we do alone. God is always there, ready to answer, ready to equip, ready to hear these words as we live and try to put them into practice.